Hello, everybody. Today is July 15, 2010. I'm here with the Honorable Louise Harrison.
And Louise, how do you know I'm honorable?
Well, I don't. You're correct. Okay, I'm here with the Dishonorable Louise Harrison, and we're going to talk about a few things from her past.
Oh no!
And have a little fun here today. And I appreciate you coming here to be a guest for Songs for the Planet today.
Okay.
There's no telling who'll hear this interview, but I know this will be
blessed.
There's
no telling how this interview is going to go.
Huh? You're correct. So you know we may have to edit this whole thing. Who knows? But I really want you to tell everybody first. Let's get our priorities right about the Harrison hug.
Well, a number of years ago, when George and I connected up again after, you know, a fairly lengthy absence, he gave me a great big hug. And this particular time, he said to me, pass it on. So after he died, I thought, well, I ought to take note of what he told me when he hugged me that time and start passing his hug on. So I started giving people a Harrison hug. One time, actually, I gave a Harrison McCartney hug because I'd just been in to see Paul after one of his concerts, before the concert, and he'd given me a big old hug. And when I came out from backstage, people were crowding around me, and I said, okay, well, you're getting a Harrison and a McCartney hug tonight. But I had an email from somebody in South America about a year or so ago, and they said, I received a Harrison hug for my birthday, and it had come from somebody that you had given it to in Cleveland in 2002.
Oh my gosh.
So that really made me feel good because I realized that George's love is going all around the world. And as long as people get the hug and pass it on and tell the story of why to pass it on, and that keeps on going, then, you know, it's something really good that his presence and his spirit is, you know, connecting with people all around the world. So I feel right. Very, very proud of all of that.
Well, tell me this. Some people may not know your association with Mr. Harrison here of the Beatles. Tell everybody how you fit into the picture of the Beatles.
Okay, well, I met a young fellow who was about 8 hours old one day, and it turned out that he was my third brother. And since I was 11 at the time, my mum let me hold him because she figured I was, you know, old enough and sensible enough not to drop him. And he was wonderful. He was about 24, 25 days past his due date. He was born about 10 minutes after midnight on February the 25th, 1943. But he arrived, as I say, about 25 days after his due date. He waited until he was completely finished before he came out. He had beautiful long eyelashes, beautiful fingernails, and he was 10.5 pounds. Oh, and he had a lovely little tuft of blonde hair, but he didn't have any teeth yet. Mm. But I loved him anyway.
All right. Well, that was how many years ago?
Well, he died when he was 58. And let me see. That was not, I don't know.
Well, that goes back.
It goes back. It was actually, he died in 2001, November the 29th. In 2001.
So you go from older sister to now you're doing a special thing in Branson
now
these days.
I'm an old fogey.
Oh gosh, no, but now you're continuing the music in Branson there. Tell everybody what all you're doing there.
Oh yes, well again, after George died, I met with a guy who was playing George in a Beatle band, and after I started talking to him, I felt so much connection to him because he was so much like my brother in his personality. He sounded and looked like him on stage, but then when we started talking, you know, man to man or woman to man or whatever, he just seemed, his personality was, he was so kind and funny and just compassionate. It's a really, really nice fellow, and so we adopted each other. But our relationship over the last few years has developed into, as he put it himself one day, sometimes he's my brother, sometimes he's my father, and sometimes he's my son.
Wow.
So wow. It's really wonderful. But we got talking one day, and he said, you know, there's lots and lots of Beatle bands out there, and you know, some of them are pretty good and some of them are not quite so good, but I've been supportive of all of them. And so he said, why don't we put together our own band and try to make it the most excellent representation of the Beatles that we possibly can. So that's what we did. We, you know, rounded up John, Paul, George and Ringo, and also an absolutely incredible keyboard player. And he plays all of the orchestral music and the flutes and all of that thing that's in the later Beatle music. So we're able to perform on stage music that the Beatles are only ever able to produce in the studio. And we do a full Broadway type show.
And what's the venue where y'all perform?
We are at the Mansion. The Mansion Theatre in Branson.
Fantastic.
Yes, yeah. It's really a lot of fun. It's a beautiful theatre. And we also have Kathy Rigby's Peter Pan there, which is an absolutely incredible show. And she's just a fantastic little lady.
I have not seen her show there.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's one of the few people that I've met on the planet that's a grown-up that's actually smaller than me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But then, you know, I love the show because I've always been Peter Pan myself anyway. I'm not going to grow up. No way. Yeah.
But I know, relative to the music of the Beatles here in America, that in the beginning, there weren't too many people that were promoting the music here, and you were one of the first promoters of their music here in America. Is that correct?
Well,
not officially, but...
As a big sister, I was just so thrilled, because I've always been a real ham all my life. So when I discovered that my brother was in showbiz, I said, okay, let's get him up that ladder, you know. And I started going around to all of the radio stations within about a couple of hundred mile radius of my home and saying, okay, this is my kid brother's latest record and he's number one in England, so you should be playing him. And I was politely told, no, my dear, you should go home and look after your husband. You know, back in those days, men were male chauvinist pigs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Of course, they're not like that anymore.
There's none of them that way anymore?
I don't think so, no. But as far as I was concerned, I didn't care whether they told me it wasn't commercial. Nobody was going to listen to it. I kept on because my little brother was going to get somewhere, whether they liked it or not.
Wow. And you had some success with that too, correct?
Well, eventually, yeah. But I think, you know, the whole thing is that the Beatles as a phenomenon really were like a comet just blazing across the heavens. And nothing could have stopped them, and nothing could have really been anything other than the creator itself.
Well, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, I really believe so. Because, you know, I'm certainly not claiming to have made the Beatles, and I don't think anybody else did. They were it.
All right, what's your favorite song of the Beatles?
I like them all. Each one that I hear, it becomes my favorite song for that particular moment. I think, though, in order to answer that question a little bit more realistically, that what I think is the most important song that the Beatles wrote was one written by John, and it's called Imagine.
Oh, yeah.
So that, to me, is probably the most significant song that really sums up what they were all about.
Wow.
You know, imagine all the people living life in peace. Wouldn't that be incredible?
Wow. Yeah. Very well said, very well said. What would you say, I mean, being so close to them, what did the Beatles' music stand for?
I don't know that the music itself stood for anything other than a bunch of four young lads trying to learn how to make music. You know, when they first started out, they couldn't read music, and they only knew one chord on the guitar. And that's probably why most of their early music was sufficiently simple that even the smallest child can sing it.
Right.
But I think as they grew and became, you know, more and more well known, the music translated itself into a message, and their whole demeanor and their whole output became this message of love and peace. And that's basically what I'm trying to keep alive, because since I've outlived my brother and, you know, and John, of course, I feel that as a member of the same DNA and the same flesh and blood, that I can probably more legitimately keep that message alive than perhaps a lot of other people can. And so the show that we do in Branson at the moment with Liverpool Legends is done with a great deal of love and respect, and also with a sense of joy and fun. And it's just amazing that the people, after the show, when they walk out into the lobby, there's almost an aura around them because they're just glowing with joy. And it's just such a wonderful, wonderful feeling to see those faces and to see those smiles coming toward me, and knowing that we've done something to make people happy for a couple of hours.
Boy, that's a pretty good thing to be doing these days.
Oh, yes.
There's all a lot of tender things out there in people's lives. And
yeah.
Music is just powerful.
It is.
You know, it's very powerful.
And it's, you know, the one universal language.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that I really appreciate that you shared with me the other day was how George was a big advocate for arts for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know this about any of the Beatles, that, and certainly about anyone. And, you know, I would like for you to tell us about the public service announcements that probably most recordings and most people haven't heard from him.
Yes, he only ever did one, to my knowledge.
Can you tell us about that?
Yes, that was in conjunction with the movie Mr. Holland's Opus, and he did it for, you know, specifically for that purpose. But the actual message of it, I don't have it word for word or anything, but he was basically saying that, you know, whilst we are being educated, that it's important to think, you know, beyond the reading, writing and arithmetic, and to realize that music and arts and drama and all of those things are also very, very critical to our development as human beings. And he kind of ended up by saying, after all, look what it did for me. And so in the present era that we're in right now, where funding is being cut for just about everything, you know, even the reading, writing and arithmetic,
right,
and everybody's having a very, very hard struggle, you know, with unemployment and all the rest of the things, we had it was our sound man that came up with the concept of, we have a lot of free time towards the end of the year. And we thought, well, okay, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could put together a tour where we would go in to maybe to take one city, for instance, and stay there for a week and go out to maybe five schools within, or high schools or colleges, within about a 10 or 15 mile radius of that city. And previously, we would send charts of Beatle music to the school and have the band and choral departments learn, you know, a couple of songs.
Yes.
And then also maybe have the drama department take the lyrics of a Beatles song, whichever they wanted to choose, and do a little sketch on the song. So, and then incorporate that into our concert. And, you know, I'd probably go in maybe a week before and give a little chat to the school. It would have to be a school that had an auditorium of about 1,000. And we'd encourage the kids to sell the tickets at $20 a piece. And the child that sold the most tickets would win a Beatle rock band, the video game.
Awesome.
That would be a prize for each child, for each winner of the contest of selling the most tickets. We'd come, we'd do the concert, they would perform with us, and we'd make some kind of a little commemoration that they could take back with them. And then a portion of the proceeds would go toward the music and drama and arts department in that school.
That's fabulous.
Yeah. So this is what we want to do, and to follow in what George's idea was, to keep that part of what he was about alive.
I understand you got a new book project coming out, and I understand that, it ought to be a side that nobody else has seen on the Beatles. Can you tell us about this?
Well, okay. For many, many years, people have been asking me to write a book, and there have been so many books written about the Beatles by people who maybe sat beside them on a bus for 15 seconds and don't really know anything about them, that I thought, well, okay, maybe it's time that I did write a book. And let's face it, I'm going to be 80 next year, so, you know, my expiration date's coming up, so I better get it done, you know, before then. And, you know, let's face it, I'm probably one of the few people alive that has known, knew George since he was 8 hours old, and that knew the Beatles from the time they did the Ed Sullivan Show, and also was, you know, instrumental in trying to get them going in the United States, get them on those first couple of steps of the ladder to see where they were going to go.
Right.
So I think it's possible that maybe I might have a little bit more true, perception of them than the average person that's written a book about them. So I feel, okay, maybe I should give it a go and see what happens.
Well, tell us about the title and why you called it the title.
Yeah, well, the great thing about the Beatles was that they were very, very unpretentious. It didn't matter how big and famous and rich they became. They were still the same, you know, good-hearted lads. And they, you know, they were honest and trustworthy and, you know, just decent fellows. And so, you know, I think it would be nice to bring that out, as opposed to all of the scandal things that have been said about them. And so at the moment, the working title is Real George by Real Lou.
Wow.
Because that's how our parents brought us up to be, you know. And to understand, too, that whatever gifts we have, whatever talents we have, come from one source. Wow. And it's not ourselves.
Well, tell me this. What did your parents, how did they handle the career? And was it hard or easy? How did the parents handle all of it?
They were great. Success? They just jumped in with both feet. And as soon as they started receiving thousands of letters every day, they just started answering them. And we all of us, you know, people have often said to me, you know, wasn't it exciting? We just took it as this was part of our lives. It was the normal, this is what we were here for, I guess, because we all just took to it very, very naturally.
Wow. Well, so. Without a doubt, you know, one of the greatest history makers of all time in the music ever, the Beatles. And it's like, to hear you talk like that is very refreshing. I mean, everybody stepped up, did their job.
Yeah.
And everybody had fun, it sounds like.
Had fun. And tried to do some good along the way, you know, without being holier than thou about it, you know.
Well, where do you see, as an elder in this business and...
You mean an old fogey?
No, no. But where do you see the music going of today? You know,
I try not to listen to some of the stuff that's coming out today.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I suppose because I'm so involved with the Beatle music and, you know, I'm at the theatre almost every night that we're working, I don't really get the opportunity really to find out that there is other good music out there. So I it would be really unfair of me to comment on the other music that's out there.
Wouldn't you recommend that everybody... all the young people coming up, wouldn't you highly recommend they all buy the Beatles records? Because I know I would.
No, it's up to them. And one of the things that George believed totally was that they were not in competition with anybody else, that there's enough variety being presented and there's enough people that everybody has a shot at doing okay. And so, I mean, if people like Beatle music and... One of the things that our show is doing and all the other people who are doing live Beatle music is we're generating more generations of Beatle people.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, you know, the royalties will keep on rolling in, I guess, to Apple, yeah.
Absolutely. And where you're living now in Branson, correct?
Yes, yes.
And you're planning on staying there for a while.
I imagine.
The show, correct?
Well, as long as I last.
Okay. are there any parting thoughts that you would like to share to the... people that visit our website here at Songs for the Planet?
Yes. I think it's important for people to realize that although people like the Beatles and many other so-called stars in the world became very rich and very famous, that that's really not what life's all about. That the most important thing that you have to have as a goal is to do something worthwhile, to be good and kind to your neighbors, to be compassionate, not to take care of the earth. I mean, let's face it, our planet is our, you know, it's how we survive. It's our home. And not to be envious of people that have a lot of money, because a lot of money doesn't necessarily make you happy. But having a lot of good friends and having a lot, you know, a good goal in life, it makes you much, much more happy than money could ever possibly.
Well, Lou, I appreciate you being so gracious to see us today here at the studio. And I wish you well in all your endeavors. I want to buy one of your first copies of your book.
Okay, and, well, maybe I can just give you one.
And I tell you what, I know people will be looking forward to that. And I'm going to recommend everybody come out to Branson and see that show.
Good, thank you.
Because if there's one show they ought to see, it's a Beatles show.
And also, while they're there, we also have Kathy Rigby's Peter Pan at the same theater, and that's an incredibly wonderful show.
So one more time, the website for the...
Yes, it's Liverpool. I'll spell it out. Of course, the www, you know. LiverpoolLegends.com. LiverpoolLegends.com.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Have a great rest of your life.
Thank you.